Coming up on Chasing the Natty, Week 5, the college fantasy football season is set to be the biggest one yet, and we're here to help you get locked and loaded for it. I'll be discussing some QB changes that have made the headlines this week. Then, as always, I'll be giving you guys a couple of players at each of the main positions that I'm starting, a couple of whom I'll be sitting, and then we'll be finishing up with some of your awesome fan-submitted start-sit questions. I've got all of that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Friday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there with any of our extraordinary tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devi, C2C, college IDPs, or what else we got? We got daily fantasy, DFS, that's the term I was looking for. We got college DFS, we got prize picks and stuff like that. So we got all of that, including articles, rankings, projections, tools, and even more than that. You can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. Once again, I appreciate all of you guys for tuning in. If you haven't already, show us some love by leaving a little like, a little comment, and a little subscribe on the YouTube side of things. And then if you're on the podcast side of things, leave a 5-star review and make sure you're following the show. Not only does that support us, but it also supports the entire college fantasy game in general, helps us get in front of the eyeballs of people who might be interested in this sort of thing. So, y'all, I got some explaining to do. We normally release these start-sit shows, these weekly previews, on Wednesday, and here I am releasing it on Friday, and I would love to give you guys a ton of like big crazy excuses or anything like that, but I will admit, basically the story goes that Tuesday I was doing some outreach for my company on Tuesday night. I planned to record when I got home late that night, but then the Lord was not kind to me that night, and I was struck with a migraine pretty much as soon as I was done with my work event, and I basically passed out at 9 p.m. that night, and I wasn't able to get it done then. And then last night, for those of you who know me personally, but I have a date night with my wonderful, beautiful girlfriend every Wednesday night. It is something that I would not trade for the world every single week. And so we went and did that. And then once again, I thought about recording when I got back home, but unfortunately I just got back. And by the time I had put together my show notes, put together my graphics and everything like that, it was just far too late at night. I did not have the energy to really put together everything. So I appreciate all of you guys out there for being patient. I'm hoping to get this out as soon as I can for you guys. That way you can get it before your lineups kind of lock up with your auto subs and everything before tonight, or before Thursday night's games here. But we will see how that goes. With all that being said, y'all, we got a lot to get through here today. Normally, I don't really go diving into news every single week with these preview shows, but given some of the things that have been going on with college football this past week and the discussions being had, I feel like personally, I just kind of have my say a little bit with it. And also, again, there is some pretty big time CFF impacts that come with two of these quarterback changes that we have this week. And then after that, after I get done with my spiels on both of those guys, we will get into what you guys normally come for here on every one of these preview shows. Again, I'll give you my starts and sits for the weeks. I will give you my Or then I'll answer some of y'all's questions that you have submitted to me. Again, y'all have been doing a great job with those questions. Got a really good lineup of questions this week, so make sure you tune into that. Even if it's not your question, lots of great discussions to be had and ways to think about your start and sits later on that you could tune into for that. So, with all that being said, I think we might as well go ahead and get in on the news here. Yeah, unless you've had your head under a rock this past week, you have pretty much seen the entire college football world react to the news of Matthew Sluka, quarterback out of UNLV, formerly of Holy Cross, announced on Twitter that he will be redshirting the entire remaining year for UNLV, and he will be sitting out the rest of the year. And this comes with him saying that UNLV is breaking NIL promises to him. So, of course, this news breaks that Sluka's doing this over NIL promises not being kept, and that led to the entire college football world having a nice, rational, adult conversation where nobody was jumping to conclusions about the state of the sport, and everybody was hearing out all sides equally and making sure that all things, all perspectives were considered on this. I'm obviously kidding. It was an absolute whirlwind, in which case a lot of people made absolute fools of themselves by jumping to conclusions. If you go and look at my Twitter, actually, I don't think I really said anything about this the entire time. If I did say anything about it, it was usually in DMs or private Slack channels here at C2C when I was kind of reacting to it. But again, in terms of the public discourse, like, I've kind of stayed out of it for the most part because I knew that there was going to be a lot of things that kind of came out of this. And so now here we are a couple of days later, and basically here's, for those of you who have kind of missed out on what's been going on, basically it's kind of boiled down to this. Sluka was made a promise by an offensive staff member of 100K. I'm not going to say who that offensive staff member is, but I'll be real. If you kind of dig into it a little bit, it's pretty clear who made this offer to Sluka. So Sluka came to UNLV under that assumption that he would get that money. And the NIL collective, truthfully, from what I gather, says they made no such agreement and that this was made outside of the collective, therefore they're under no obligation to do that. And then the coaching staff kind of kept pushing back this issue. They kind of knew it was something that needed to be figured out. And then eventually, when the payments just aren't being made, Sluka brings it up to Odom. Odom tells him, just like the collective, that that previous offer of 100K was offered by a staff member that was not him, and therefore isn't valid. And from the school side, they're... And so basically that is the story from the Sluka camp. Basically, like, they were told they would get 100K for Sluka. That money is not being paid out. The NIL collective saying that they are under no obligation to do it. The team is saying they have no obligation to do so. And from the school side of things, a bunch of things started coming out. These rumors started coming out about what exactly was going on here. And quite frankly, the fact I don't want to show my bias here. I'm trying not to show my bias here, but I'll be real. Like, this story kept changing on what was happening from the anti-Sluka side here, right? First, it was said that Sluka was simply strong-arming the team for more money after going 3-0 to start, and then he got himself an agent, which that rumor didn't make any kind of sense because Sluka already had an agent going into last year. More on that agent here in a minute, by the way. Then the story changed that another school, a Power 4 school in particular, offered Sluka to sit out the rest of the term with their own NIL deal, and Sluka then tried to turn that into strong-arming the team that way. But that also, that rumor doesn't really make any sense either, because Sluka straight up is not a good quarterback. That's one thing I got really wrong this offseason, was I was convinced that Sluka was held back by his system at Holy Cross. It was not him that was limited as a passer. Well, here we are 3 games later. He is sub 45% completion percentage, and he has looked atrocious throwing the ball. I don't see a Power 4 school looking at what Sluka's done over the last 3 games and saying, like, that's the dude. That's the guy that I need to go and completely flip this program on its head in order to bag for next year. A guy that did well at Holy Cross, don't get me wrong, but he's not the reason why UNLV is at the point they're at in this season, right? So, again, that rumor didn't really make any sense. And then the school like takes the firm stance of saying like all NIL commitments by the collective have been fulfilled to Sluka, which like in my opinion is fair because based on everything we've heard, this was not a deal made with the NIL collective. It was a deal made with an offensive staff member. So I can kind of get the NIL collective saying like, hey, like we don't have this money. We don't have any obligation to fulfill this money. I still think it's kind of crappy because again, if you really, Bud Elliott said it very, very well. If you truly believe this guy is the reason why you're doing so well at this point, even if you, the collective did not make this agreement, he is your quarterback and you can find $100K to be able to pay your quarterback somewhere in the budget, right? So clearly the NIL collective has said like, we have no obligation with this, right? And just to add on top of everything else, the agent for Sluka turns out wasn't even licensed in Nevada. And so even if he had made a deal, it probably still would not have been valid because he, in order to make a deal like this in Nevada, you got to be licensed by the state, which is like, basically this boils down to, in my opinion, like here are the main villains of the story. And by the way, neither Sluka nor I would even say Odom is really included here outside of the fact that I don't really get how Odom thought that there wasn't any NIL deal for Sluka. Did he really think that like Sluka was just going to play for UNLV for free, right? I don't get that part, but even so, I think Odom at the end of the day is mostly okay here, but and Sluka to me I think is very okay. I think that the villains of the story here are this. One, that offensive staff member who made this promise behind both Odom and the collective's back, right, very clearly did not lift a finger to actually make sure that that deal was upheld. Two, this agent who is very clearly terrible at his job and should be fired by the Sluka camp. Like, how are you as an agent not finding every way fashionable for this guy that you're representing, that you're getting to move cross country and making sure that this deal is locked in place, right? Like this agent is clearly terrible. Again, like it wasn't even licensed in the state, clearly doesn't know what he's doing. And then three, I kind of touched on this earlier, just everyone who jumped to conclusions about Sluka and the state of this sport, especially negative connotations on this, it was so clear that, again, clearly this shows problems with the NIL structure of the sport right now. No doubt about it, y'all. It makes very clear to me that there needs to be a structure, there needs to be standardization of how these NIL deals are put together and how they are upheld, how they're enacted, right? But that doesn't mean the sport's over. That doesn't mean that, oh, all the people that are doom and gloom about NIL were right or anything like that. This is a clear-cut case of an employer coming over or an employee coming over to his employer and saying, hey, you're not paying me what I thought I was supposed to be paid. The employer saying, we never made an obligation to that. And if that's the case, the employee has every right to say, well, then I quit, right? If I'm not getting what I thought I was getting coming into this, then I quit. And then also just all these stories about Sluka, man, like shame on the Las Vegas beat reporters that were just pushing out these rumors of Sluka, like getting money hungry and like after 3-0, like strong arming the team for more money, or that he's going to quit on his teammates because a Power Four school comes and offers him more money. Like shame on all of them for jumping to that. Like it's so clear that after everything has come out, that that is not what's going on here. It is very clearly a breakdown in communication between the Sluka camp and the UNLV team and NIL collective here based on two people, the agent and this offensive staff member that made a deal and there and had no way of actually making sure that it came through. So that's all I have to say on that. That's enough rambling for my part. I've been going on this for like 10 minutes. Good Lord, my apologies, y'all. Y'all are wondering, how does this affect CFF, right? Like we've had tons of people reach out to me, reach out to us at C2C asking like, what does this mean for the UNLV offense? And, you know, especially the person that more people are interested in, and that is former first/second round pick in CFF drafts, Ricky White. The good news is we don't think that there's going to be that much of a drop off behind Sluka. Haj Malik Williams was also a transfer into UNLV this offseason. He was a starter at Campbell 3 out of the last 5 years. He's gotten hurt. He's had some injury history there, right? But he came in last year, or not last year. He came in during the spring And during the spring, he looked really good during the spring game. And as much as it seemed like that it was a pretty foregone conclusion once Sluka announced that he was transferring there, that he would be the one starting in the fall, Williams looked to be giving Sluka a pretty good run for his money. Heck, Sluka wasn't even announced as the starter until game one came around. So now Sluka's gone. Williams has been officially named the starting QB. This seems to be been met with a round of support from his teammates on social media, which I then confirmed with one of my sources at UNLV that Williams is very extremely popular among his teammates there, which honestly, in my opinion, makes you wonder why UNLV didn't go with him to begin with, considering how clearly, one, close the competition was. Like, they didn't, like I said, they didn't announce Luka was the number one guy until week one. But two, if he has such support in the locker room, and especially considering the fact that they're clearly, based on the headlines from this past week, there was no NIL incentive to really push for Sluka to be the starter like there would be like with DJU at Florida State, right? Regardless of anything else, the takeaway to me, based on what I've been able to find with Williams, is that he won't be as dynamic on the ground as Sluka, right? Like, Sluka obviously is probably one of the better quarterback runners that we've seen in the G5 in a long time. But Williams can still clearly run, right? The last 2 years as a starter for Campbell, he's had 250 plus on the ground, 5 touchdowns on the ground each of his last 2 years. And in the first year that he played for Campbell, he had 151 carries for 664 yards and 9 touchdowns there. Now, clearly that was back in 2019. That was 5 plus years ago. And so we haven't seen another season like that since then from Williams. So that tells me either that was a fluke, or he got injured the next 2 years. The next 2 years he had about half the stats, and clearly he's just not quite the same as a runner since then, but he can still clearly run. He can still kind of add that dynamic or to this offense still. But even more relevant for CFF, Williams is a more consistent passer than Sluka, which is going to help out Ricky White quite a bit and should let this team throw for more than 18 attempts in a game. If they're getting back to, you know, 25 attempts per game, and Ricky White is still kind of sitting there with 35-40% of the target share of this offense, we'll get quickly back to Ricky White getting back to where he was last season. If you don't believe that, if you don't think that's going to happen, you think that they're going to still try to fit Williams into that same role, I would try to sell Ricky White like right now, because that is like, this feels like the peak. If that's the route things go, right, where Williams just isn't that catalyst that we need to get Ricky White back on track compared to where he was last year, this is the highest value you're going to get on Ricky White moving forward. So that's only if you believe that that's what's going to happen. I personally think that this is going to help Ricky White out a ton. Again, Williams has, he had his best year passing last year. He had 70% completion percentage, 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns. So again, is that going to fully translate to the G5 compared to the FCS? Probably not, right? We saw Sluka, who had, you know, 59 or like anywhere between 57 and 61 completion percentage at the FCS level, dropped down to 43%. In the first 3 games this year. So again, maybe Williams drops down a little bit compared to what we've seen, but for now, I think Williams is actually going to help Ricky White quite a bit. We'll see if anything really happens with Sluka, given everything that's going on. I doubt we see him in a UNLV uniform again, which means Haj Malik Williams, pretty solid waiver guy if you want to go out and grab him right now. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head what his roster percentage is off the top of my head. Let me see if I can look that up real quick, actually. That might have been good to look up before I went live here. But yeah, oh yeah, he's rostered on like 5% of leagues. So if you're looking for a startable quarterback option, it is a bit of a tough matchup this weekend against Fresno State. But based on what I remember from the over-under on that game, they still expect UNLV to score a decent bit. So I think he's a guy that, if you're struggling at quarterback, definitely a guy I would be looking at on the waivers. Another guy that you can go and look for on the waivers right now is Michael Hawkins at Oklahoma, who it officially has been announced he will be taking over the starting quarterback job for the Oklahoma Sooners. Again, he's rostered on 14% of leagues right now, so not as widely available as Williams, but even still, something to take a look at here. If we go back to this past week with the Oklahoma-Tennessee game, Jackson Arnold wasn't the sole reason why Oklahoma got embarrassed in that game, but he was a pretty big chunk. Like, yes, that offensive line did not help, but that offensive line also didn't force Jackson Arnold to short throw a pass straight to a defender in the first quarter, right? Yes, Oklahoma is missing their top three receivers. That didn't force Arnold to fumble it twice on the very play after his defense has got crucial turnovers, just handed the ball right back to Tennessee on both occasions, and that could have been huge for Oklahoma early in this game. It was so clear he was a liability in that game. He had to come off the field. So who does he get replaced with? True freshman Michael Hawkins. He comes in, and for the second half here, it really looks like this Oklahoma offense showed signs of life. Nothing changed the game or anything, right? But just overall, this offense looked more competent. To give you an idea here, right, Arnold had 3.4 yards per attempt on the day. Meanwhile, Hawkins came in and doubled that for 7.4 yards per attempt. Now, 7.4 yards per attempt is not, you know, blowing the world away or anything, but just to give you an idea of how rough Arnold was and just how much Hawkins looked better after he came in. The other thing that really stands out with Hawkins is his rushing ability, right? It seems more like what Oklahoma needs behind that offensive line right now with the issues that they have. Arnold can move, but it's like, you know, scrambling and mobility is definitely more ingrained in Hawkins' game right now, and that should allow him to do more when he's running for his life behind that offensive line. So, like I said, it was officially announced Hawkins will be the starter for the game at Auburn this weekend. I want to be very clear, I do not expect this to reinvigorate Oklahoma's offense to, you know, Dylan Gabriel levels last year, right? As mentioned before, there are bigger problems on this offense beyond just Arnold, but I do think with Hawkins, there is a much higher ceiling for Oklahoma's offense going forward as part of their range of outcomes game to game. Again, I'm not saying they reached that ceiling, right? But I think it's an option now. As for Hawkins, like I said, obviously his scrambling ability makes it for a pretty intriguing option in CFF, but we do also have to remember that he is a true freshman starting in his first game ever. And oh, by the way, your first start ever is going to be an SEC team on the road in Jordan-Hare Stadium and all the voodoo that comes with that. So I'm excited to see what Hawkins brings given his skill set and what the system is on paper. Again, we love Seth Luttrell on paper, but I'm cautiously optimistic to see what the Sooners can do here moving forward. So all that being said, that's enough of that. Again, talking way too long about some of this news, but I hope you guys just appreciate the deep dive on both of those situations there. Let's move on to some actual start-sit situations here. And we'll do our start sits for this week. Again, just a reminder to everybody, my rules that I set for myself when I name my starts and my sits. When it comes to my starts, these have to be players who are outside the top 60 in scoring to this point in the season. And then for my sits, they will always be players who are inside the top 40 to this point in the season. I think I mixed up the first part. Starts are players outside the top 60. I think I said 40. They're outside the top 60, and then sits are players inside the top 40 to this point in the season. So that being said, let's move on and go with my starts for this weekend. So first up, we have Mr. KJ Jefferson, quarterback out of UCF. He's going up against Colorado this weekend. Obviously, those of us, Mike, myself, who were big on drafting Jefferson this offseason, were expecting a much higher ceiling than, frankly, what we've gotten so far with Jefferson, right? Now, it's not like he's had duds. He had 24 points against New Hampshire. He had 25 points this past week against TCU in a comeback victory there. His rushing's been actually solid week to week. Again, 39, 50, 46. Nothing that blows you away, but, you know, a safe floor there option each week. But man, we just haven't seen that top end performance. Like the likes of which we've been drafting John Rhys Plumlee for the last couple of years. The ceiling that can really come from a Gus Malzahn quarterback, especially one that can run like Jefferson can, especially a big boy like Jefferson is. And so I think, obviously, given the fact that I'm listing here as a start, I think that this weekend is the weekend where we see one of those big performances, right? As I mentioned, he hasn't really broken higher than 26 fantasy points in a four-point passing format. If we look at Colorado's defense, they're labeled as the 39th best pass defense in the country. They're labeled as the 69th best rushing defense. Far cry from the atrociousness from last year. So this is not me just picking on Colorado's defense. I do think, however, that there are some things that are kind of skewing Colorado's results to this point in the season, right? Colorado's defense, again, labeled as 39th best passing defense of the country there, heavily, that average is heavily brought down by the fact that they face Colorado State, who is 118th in their passing game this year, and Baylor, who's 104th. So they face two bottom 30 passing offenses, and that's allowed them to really kind of get away with some of their other stuff. So I do think that Jefferson and this passing game, especially Kobe Hudson, should be able to find some nice success in this game. The other thing is that when I look at Colorado's defense, again, I mentioned that they're 69th best in rushing defense. Their D does seem to be susceptible to one thing in particular, and that is rushing quarterbacks. Guess what? KJ Jefferson's that. Again, against North Dakota State, Cam Miller ran 16 times for 81 yards and two touchdowns. Sawyer Robertson, who's not really a guy that a lot of people really think of as a... He's not really a guy that a lot of people think of as a rushing quarterback. 9 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown in that game. In addition to everything else, again, I'm going a little long on this one. I promise some of the other ones will be a little bit quicker. But if you just look at the over-under on this game, if you look at the spread here, it favors KJ Jefferson being able to score quite a bit in addition to RJ Harvey, right? Because over-under is 64.5, one of the highest on the weekends. UCF spreads about two touchdowns. So if you kind of do the math on that, you're looking at, let's see, you're looking at about 38 to 40 points expected to be scored by UCF here. That should be plenty for Jefferson to be able to go with here. And I think we're going to see probably the best rushing production from KJ Jefferson here. My other start for the weekend at quarterback is Kirk Francis, quarterback out of Tulsa, going up against North Texas. Once again, just going on certain parameters that I like to go for, right? One, high over-under game here, 68.5. North Texas only favored by 6.5 points. You're expecting both of these teams to hit the 30s in this game pretty easily. And when you look at Francis's production, it's been a little disappointing, not going to lie, especially after that first game where he looked really, really solid. But this is the kind of game that can get him back on track. North Texas's defense is 124th in the country versus the pass. Tulsa's offense mostly goes through the pass. Their rushing game is definitely something they are struggling with right now. To give you an idea, they currently have a true freshman starting over their longtime veteran in Anthony Watkins. Just to give you an idea, they can't really get anything going there right now. So I like Francis in this spot quite a bit. I can easily see him tossing, you know, three, potentially four touchdowns in this game just to keep track or to keep on track with North Texas in this game. So give me Kirk Francis in this game. Let's move to my running back. Chezma Lucy, running back out of Wisconsin, going up against USC, is one of my starts for running back this week. USC is currently 83rd versus the rush. And according to Fantrax, they're currently 105th in the country when it comes to giving up points versus running backs. The thing that really encourages me about Malusi being able to do well this weekend, one, again, we're still not entirely sure what the status of Tobby Walker is. Without him, Malusi is, you know, their clear number one back for the Badgers. Two, we haven't really seen what Wisconsin looks like without Tyler Van Dyke. Obviously, Braden Locke came in 2 weeks ago, but that was against Alabama. They were playing from behind. It was really hard to kind of tell exactly what Wisconsin will be doing with their team moving forward. And so I do think that is another thing that's going to benefit Malusi when you got a younger quarterback back there, a backup guy, probably going to get Malusi the ball quite a bit, especially against a defense that clearly gives up some to the run. Speaking of which, the matchup against Michigan last week really sold me on the fact that I really think Malusi can have a really nice day here. Khalil Mullings ran for 17 carries for 159 yards and two touchdowns. That's great, especially considering the fact that, oh, by the way, Donovan Edwards also had his best day on the year clear by far with 14 carries, 74 yards, and a touchdown. My other point being here that all Michigan could do last week was run. They literally can't pass the ball. They ended the day with 32 yards passing last week. USC knew that, and they still couldn't stop Michigan, right? So Wisconsin, obviously not the world beater that Michigan is on the run game or anything like that, but regardless, I think that Malusi can easily hit a very similar line against USC this week, especially if USC's defense is completely tired out from how much they were on the field last week versus Michigan. So I like Malusi a lot this week. Next one up here is Terrion Stewart, running back out of Bowling Green. He's going up against Old Dominion this week. I debated back and forth whether or not this really counted, but technically, again, in total points, he's outside the top 60. And also, too, like, I think people might be still a little hesitant, right, to play him, right? Because the two times we've seen him this year have been one against Fordham, where he had 14 carries, 161 yards, and three touchdowns. And then you had 13 carries versus Texas A&M. One of those is a game where Bowling Green absolutely blew out their opponent, and one game was a game where Bowling Green was playing from behind against Texas A&M the whole time, and were just outmatched outside of, you know, Harold Fannin just doing Harold Fannin things. So this weekend against Old Dominion is the first time we really get a chance to really see what Bowling Green's going to really look like down the stretch. I think that Stewart is going to be a huge part of this game, right? Even if he does only get his 15 carries, which I personally think he'd get upwards of 20 in this game, given the fact that, again, the game script's going to help him quite a bit here. Old Dominion is 109th versus the rush so far and 116th versus running backs according to Fantrax here. Stewart's had some time to rejuvenate. He missed most of the two hardest games for Bowling Green. He's not going to get banged up from, you know, Penn State or really a ton of work against Texas A&M or anything like that. He gets Old Dominion this week. It'll be a huge breath of fresh air for him. Again, this over-under total is in the 50s. Bowling Green's favored by about 10. So again, you're looking at, you know, Bowling Green expected to be hitting about 30 points in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if Stewart finishes with two of those touchdowns in that scenario. So I like Stewart a lot this weekend. At wide receiver, got to go with my boy Josh Meredith out of Wazoo going up against Boise State. This is another one that I could have probably put on the waiver list this weekend because, again, I kind of bent my rules a little bit and went above 30% on some guys. But Meredith is really starting to find his footing a little bit here. It's a bit of a rough start here, but last 2 weeks have been especially encouraging. And he's still available in quite a few leagues. Again, rostered on 36% of rosters right now. I think you can go and grab him in a lot of places because based on what we saw the last 2 weeks, one against Washington, one against San Jose State here, Meredith's clearly becoming one of Mateer's favorite targets here. Seven targets, seven catches, 111 yards and a touchdown versus Washington. And then eight targets, five receptions, 89 yards and a touchdown versus San Jose State. Not quite that ceiling play that we've seen before with some of Ben Arbuckle's slots before, but you know, I think he's getting there, and I think this offense is clearly one of the better ones out west right now. Again, clearly Mateer is just on fire with himself right now, and so I think Meredith going to get up against Boise State this weekend. A game, by the way, where Boise State's favored by only a touchdown and the total is 63.5. Both of these teams are expected to score in this game. It's my personal favorite game of the weekend outside of my obvious dogs versus Bama this weekend, but I'm personally looking forward to that game finishing up and then immediately being able to switch over to this Washington State-Boise State game. So looking forward to that, and I think Meredith's going to do great. Last two wide receivers I'm going to throw here at the same time because mostly I'm just going to say I'm going to start my Wake Forest wide receivers wherever I got them. Taylor Moore and Donovan Green are the two that I'm really looking at here. They get Louisiana this weekend. Over-under and the spread of this game surprises me a little bit. Again, over-under 60.5. Wake Forest only favored by 3.5 points this week. It's not like Louisiana is a very big juggernaut here at all. And then when I look here, right? Louisiana, they're 70th versus the pass. I think that's even a little suspect because their first two opponents were Grambling and then Kennesaw State, who just came out of the FCS. And then in their first G5 matchup 2 weeks ago, they gave up 41 points to Tulane. Louisiana is also 101st versus the run. So if you got DeMond Claiborne, I think he's a good start here as well. This is a bit narrative streetish of me, but you know, Wake Forest got absolutely throttled by Ole Miss a couple weeks ago, and I really think that they got their bye. They're coming back in. They get a Sun Belt team coming into town. I think Wake Forest is looking for blood. I think that they're going to want to throw up some points versus Louisiana this weekend, and so I think that you'll see guys like Moore and Ann Green both be the beneficiaries of that. So I would start your Wake Forest wide receivers this weekend. All right, let me take a sip of water, then we'll get right over into our sets for the week. All right, let's look at our sits here. At quarterback, one kind of obvious, one not so obvious, maybe a little too far for some, but we'll start with our obvious one here. That's Gio Lopez, quarterback out of South Alabama, going up against LSU. Yes, I've seen how good the South Alabama offense looks over the last couple weeks. Yes, I know LSU's defense is not fixed. I'm just not a big fan, as you guys know, of starting, you know, G5 quarterbacks, even elite ones, against Power 4 teams here, especially ones that I know are loaded with talent like LSU's is. And so I'm not going to spend too much time on this one. That's basically my thought process for the most part. Again, the other quarterback here I'm going to throw out here, I can hear the homer alerts going off in people's heads, but Jalen Milroe, I am sitting this week, and I am sitting him in every league that I do have him in. I'm trying to find other options unless I legitimately just don't have any other options. And I feel like it makes sense, right? Again, yes, UGA is coming to town, and you got an over-under of 48.5 here. UGA is favored by 2, so both these teams really expected to score around 24 points in this game. I'm personally of the opinion that I could absolutely see this game scoring even lower than that. I can absolutely see both teams struggling to hit 20 points because both these teams have really, really solid defenses. And here's the thing. Some people might point out like, oh, well, Milroe had himself a really, really good game against UGA last year, right? You just remember that, you know, he did well in the SEC championship game. Well, fantasy-wise, it didn't actually amount to as much as you're really thinking. He finished the day with 18.58 fantasy points on the day. He finished with 192 yards passing, 2 touchdowns through the air, and his rushing. Now, granted, Georgia was like, you know, putting 2 spies on him at any given time, so his rushing was always going to be limited there, but he finished the day with 29 yards, right? Maybe he gets a little bit more here in this matchup because I don't think Georgia's going to try to employ that. I don't think Georgia's going to try to employ that 2 spy game again against Milroe this year, but regardless, I just think that if you're starting Milroe this week, you're basically locking yourself into 15 to, like, I think at max 22 fantasy points. And I think there's just a lot more other guys you can go out and start for just this week. Avoid one of the top defenses in the country for your starting quarterback and just go somewhere else with it. So in a very similar vein, I'll start with my running backs here, who I'm sitting here, and that is Darius Taylor, running back out of Minnesota, going up against Michigan this week. Darius Taylor is back, and it is great. He was phenomenal against Nevada. Again, 11 carries, 124 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Also caught 5 catches for 37 yards and a touchdown that game. Just on fire, vintage Darius Taylor in that Nevada game. This past week against Iowa, not so great. Again, we only saw him go for 34 yards on the ground, you know, 13 yards through the air, and finishing the day with 47 yards total. That's obviously not great, but what is even more concerning, in my opinion, is the fact that he only got 10 carries again. And so that tells me that the staff is not fully ready. Because, I can understand only 11 carries versus Nevada. You know, you're popping off 11 yards per carry. You finish the day with 124 yards. Yeah, you get less work because you're just doing more with the what carries you're getting. Versus Iowa, you know, he's only popping off 3.4 yards per carry, and they just weren't feeding him nearly as much. That tells me the staff isn't fully bought into the idea that Darius Taylor is fully back. Now, granted, there might have been some game script issues there. He did get 6 targets, only caught 2 of them. But you get Michigan coming in here, right? Top 10 in rushing defense. Iowa's very similar vein. Total of 35.5 in this game. I just think that this is one of those games where Darius Taylor is not going to be what you want him to be. And so I would move off of him for this week, try to find some other options at running back unless you cannot at all. And then my other running back that I'm sitting for this week is my man, Kwale Conley, running back out of Arizona going up against Utah. Obviously, it was good news for Kwale Conley that Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, after playing in a game this season, is suddenly deemed ineligible for the foreseeable future, and that makes Conley the clear number one back for this Arizona offense, and he's looked pretty solid doing so. Again, 17 carries, 112 yards versus Northern Arizona, 14 carries, 48 yards, and a touchdown against Kansas State, and that was a game, once again, game scripted out of. He probably could have finished the day even better had that game just been a little bit more competitive, but regardless, I think because of that, I'm a little worried about this matchup against Utah this weekend. Utah's favored by 11. Total is 47.5, so they're not expecting Arizona to put up a ton of points here. And in addition, Utah has the 22nd rushing defense so far this year, and I think that's good enough to really hold Conley down for a lower-end performance on his route. So I'm sitting Kwale Conley wherever I can this week and trying to find some better options. My two receivers are two guys that, one is a guy that I like in Denzel Boston, wide receiver out of Washington. He's going up against Rutgers this weekend. Once again, low over-under game here at 44.5. Rutgers favored by 2.5. So both teams kind of expected to hit that 20-24 point range. My Rutgers is currently the 18th best passing defense in the country. And here's the other thing. This is something I'm going to start pointing out to more and more, especially you get to the midway point of the season. Boston currently has 5 touchdowns in 4 games on only 287 yards of production. 2 of these games have had 2 touchdowns in both of them. Like I said, this is a part of the year where you can start looking for some regression candidates going forward in CFF, right? So like on average, we've done the math before, and on average, you can expect a touchdown every 100 to 115 yards of receiving production from receivers. If you do the math here, based on Boston's production so far, given the fact he has 5 touchdowns, you would correlate that with roughly, you know, 500, 575 yards of receiving so far, and he's only got 287. So we can expect a few games probably here in the new future where Boston probably finishes the game with 0 touchdowns, and to me, a good candidate for that is a game against Rutgers, on the road at Rutgers, I might add, where neither team's really expected to put up a ton of points. It's going to be a physical matchup. So I'm sitting Boston. And then the other guy is a double dip from last week because I got it wrong last week. He ended up going popping off against Nebraska. But guess what? I like pain and I like making a fool out of myself. And so I'm going to put Matt Bryant back on my sits list for this week. Very similar to Boston. 6 touchdowns, 4 out of 4 games. 3 of these games have had 2 touchdowns in both coming in the same game on only 309 yards receiving. That's about half of what you would expect given the fact that he has 6 touchdowns so far. He scored a touchdown on 25% of his targets. Now, clearly that kind of points to a role he has here, right, where, you know, obviously Luke Altmyer loves his outside guys between Zachary Franklin and Pat Bryant, right? He's looking for these guys when he's going for a kill shot to the end zone. But like I said, 25% of his targets resulting in touchdowns is simply not sustainable, especially when Zachary Franklin has more targets than Pat Bryant to this point in the year, but he has 0 touchdowns. Pat Bryant has 6 touchdowns on 24 targets. Zachary Franklin has 29 targets, 0 touchdowns to show for it. That is going to balance out at some point this year, right? Pat Bryant is not going to be scoring, you know, 1.5 touchdowns per game the rest of the year. And this matchup against Penn State is a very similar to the Washington Rutgers game a perfect place for that to happen. And it's even worse because when you do the team total expectation here, right, for Illinois, you're looking at them like Vegas expecting them to score in the 14 to 16 point range. So two touchdowns on the day when you got backs back there, when Zachary Franklin still needs to get his and Altmyer can run him in some. I really think that Pat Bryant is very unlikely to get the day that you really want out of him. And if he doesn't get those touchdowns, his production is not going to be the thing that really helps you overcome those lack of touchdowns, right? Because like if I look at what he has done without those touchdowns, he has games of, you know, 63, 70, 102, 74. So like solid, right? But nothing that, you know, you would look at the end of your day and be like, well, at least I got 10 points out of him. I think that this is a game where he's going to struggle. Wouldn't be surprised if he hits his lowest receiving yardage on the day against Penn State. So, yes. Last but not least, let's head over to our fan-submitted start sit questions. You guys, once again, I have to give you guys credit for the awesome questions that you guys have been sending over to us. There are some really, really good ones for this week. So we will start with Mr. Awood Sports at Awood Sports on Twitter. He gives us a quarterback question here. He is asking us to decide between Dylan Gabriel, quarterback out of Oregon, going up against UCLA, or we can go Kyle McCord, quarterback out of Syracuse, going up against Holy Cross, or we can go with JC French, quarterback out of Georgia Southern, going up against Georgia State. So, my immediate thought process when looking at quarterback situations like this, which, by the way, this is a six-point passing touchdown league. So, when I see six-point passing touchdown league, I don't fully get rid of the rushing side of the quarterbacks, right? Because that still provides a pretty safe floor. Those rushing yards still count a heck of a lot more than the passing yardage do, even though the touchdowns are worth the same. But obviously less important, the first thing I go to is looking for these passing matchups, right? And luckily for Awood Sports here, all three of these guys have really good matchups. Gabriel's going up against UCLA, they're 113th versus the pass. You got McCord, who's going up against an FCS opponent, should be able to handle that pretty well. And then JC French is going up against Georgia State, who's 101st versus the pass. So all of these defenses are very good matchups for these quarterbacks, so that doesn't really eliminate anybody here. The next thing I'm looking at here is I know that all of these guys have roughly the same, like I said, with the matchups all roughly being the same. I wanted to see who really gave me more opportunities per game to get points out of them, right? And so that for that, I went to completions per game. And so when you look over the last couple of games, Gabriel's at 29.33 completions per game, McCord's at 28.67 completions per game, and then JC French is at 22 completions per game. That eliminates JC French, in my opinion. That's too far down compared to the other guys. And also, there's nothing about this particular matchup that really tells me like, oh, JC French will far outperform those 22 completions per game there. Versus when you look at Gabriel McCord, right? Yes, Gabriel has, you know, 2/3 of completions more per game here. So technically you'd be like, oh, we'll just go with that. But McCord is facing the FCS opponent versus Gabriel is technically facing a conference opponent, even though, again, clearly they're pretty rough against the pass. So how do I break this down between Gabriel and McCord? And this is where the rushing production kind of comes back into play, right? I'm going to still lean Gabriel of these two just because of that rushing upside. Yes, I know, like I said, it's a six-point passing TD league, but that rushing floor can still be very nice. Plus, like I mentioned, Gabriel is facing a conference opponent at the end of the day. And so I think there's a bigger likelihood that Gabriel will be playing all 60 minutes versus UCLA versus McCord could very well be done by the middle of the third quarter versus Holy Cross. Now, granted, that can mean McCord has a really nice day, but regardless, I will be starting Mr. Dylan Gabriel and sitting Kyle McCord and JC French here for you, Mr. Awood Sports. So put my tokens there just so you have that screenshot. There we go. And let's move it on back and let's move it on to our next question here once I find the button. There we go. Next one comes to us from Mr. Hunter Walker at HWalker7 The Real on Twitter. He is asking us between three running backs. We got Abu Sama, running back out of Iowa State, going up against Houston. Or we could go with Dante Dowdle, the running back out of Nebraska, going up against Purdue this weekend. Or we can go with TJ Harden, the running back out of UCLA, going up against Oregon. So this one, I was initially saying to myself, like, oh, okay, this is all pretty solid. Like, Dowdle's been, you know, a bit inconsistent with his volume, right? Sama just hasn't really shown anything this year so far. And TJ Harden, while clearly the number one back for UCLA, is like, is it a good enough team to really show anything? And so to me, at first, all three of these guys were relatively even. But here's the thing. Sama's going up against Houston. They're 49th versus the run. I have my issues with where Houston's defense is ranked. I'll get to them here in another question in a second. But regardless, Sama, to me, is the weakest of the three. I trust him the least out of the three right now, so I would sit him pretty easily. That leaves between Harden and Dowdle. Obviously, if you guys listen to my content, you know that I like Harden as a talent. He's got a decent matchup here against Oregon. Oregon, surprisingly, 91st versus the run so far this year. Not quite as stout on defense as they have been. They're allowing 176 yards per game on the ground. So, technically, there's something there for Harden. But here's the thing that really kind of surprised me, and I didn't know this until I started researching it. Purdue is dead last in the country versus the run. Now, granted, the site I'm using did not include their FCS opponent, which actually ran for less yards on them than either of their two Power 4 opponents so far. But currently, Purdue is allowing 351.5 yards per game on the ground versus Power 4 opponents. 269 if you include their FCS opponents, but that still puts them in the bottom 10 so far. Granted, Purdue's last two games have been against Oregon State and Notre Dame, two teams that, quite frankly, don't have much interest in passing the ball and know that their strength is running the ball. I don't need Nebraska to run for 300 plus versus Purdue for Dowdle to have himself a really nice day. Who, by the way, I'm starting Dowdle over TJ Harden, even though, like I said, I like Harden. Here's my thing with Dowdle. Yes, his volume's been very inconsistent. 8 carries versus UTEP, 17 carries versus Colorado, 6 carries versus Northern Iowa, 20 carries versus Illinois. Now, what do you guys notice about that pattern, though? When you get to Power 4 opponents, when you are getting to relatively even matchups, Dowdle gets his volume, right? Clearly the number one guy in that backfield. Obviously, I would have loved him to find the end zone a little bit more, considering he had 3 touchdowns in the first 2 weeks, hasn't found the end zone since then. I think, once again, he'll get his 17 to 20 carries, if not a little bit more, if Purdue's rushing defense is truly this bad. I think Dowdle pretty considerably is in line for the best day out of these three. So I'm going with Dowdle, Hunter. So that is my play there. So let me put those back. And now let's move on to our third question, which comes to us from Mr. 863 Kane at FLA Eagle 777 on Twitter. And first of all, shout out to Kane, a longtime listener of the show, and honestly, a really, really, really good guy. And he has a question regarding three running backs here in a half PPR format. He is asking between Jadon Blue going up against Mississippi State, or Micah Bernard, running back out of Utah, going up against Arizona. Or we could go with Corey Kiner, running back out of Cincinnati, going up against Texas Tech. So, I like all three of these guys. I like all three of these matchups, right? Blue's going up against Mississippi State. Mississippi State is currently 126th versus the rush. Bernard is going up against Arizona. They're currently 113th versus the rush. Kiner is going up against Texas Tech this weekend. He is currently going up against Texas Tech, who is 92nd versus the rush. So all three of these guys are good. Bernard and Kiner, we know for a fact, are solid volume plays each and every week to this point, now that they're fully in conference play. Once they're in competitive games, Bernard and Kiner are the two guys that they're feeding. But here's the thing. Blue, first of all, it was super weird last week. Because like they said that like Blue was a game time decision, and then everybody, including myself, was thinking like, there's no way that if he's really that close, they're gonna risk him versus UL Monroe. Not only did they risk him versus UL Monroe, but they ran him 25 times, which is the most they've done ever, for 124 yards and 3 touchdowns on the day. Oh, by the way, he caught another ball for another touchdown. He had 4 touchdowns on the day. So I don't know why they felt the need to just let Blue explode against UNL Monroe, but it's now throwing a wrench in this, right? Because based on what we saw against Colorado State, based on what we saw against Michigan, right, I was starting to feel like I had a grasp on what Blue was going to be for Texas this year, and that was not quite, you know, the Steve Sarkisian RB1 of years past, and that they were going to go a bit more committee this year to everybody's surprise. But lo and behold, Blue comes out and absolutely destroys UL Monroe and has this nice, tasty matchup against Mississippi State here. I really think, are you sure there's not a way you can start all three of these guys? But two, I'm going to have to go with gut here. And I love Blue. I love the ceiling here. I think he's the one out of these three that's the most like range of outcomes, because who knows if the first 2 weeks were a fluke for Blue or if last week was a fluke for Blue. Even though I love the matchup here, I'll probably put him in third place right now versus Kiner and Bernard. We know their roles a little bit more. We know exactly what they're going to do. I'm going to go with Bernard, one, because of the matchup. One, I think the matchup versus Arizona is just a little bit juicier. But also, two, Bernard's like floor had, ever since, you know, Rising went down, or and ever since they got out of that first game against Southern Utah, his floor has basically been 100 yards every single week, right? And he's clearly the main guy that they're relying on in Rising's absence. Maybe that changes if Rising comes back this week, but for right now, I think Bernard might be the safest play of these three guys. But like I said, double check to make sure there's not a way you can't get all three of these guys in there. I would honestly think that like a fun way to go about this is like you start Bernard as a safe play and you shoot for the moon with Blue there, right? Let him be your power hitter for a grand slam weekend. So that's my thought, but I'd still say of these three, I'll be starting Micah Bernard. So let's move these back. And let us move on to our fourth question of the day. It comes to us from Julian at J. Maragliano on Twitter. He is asking us to choose between Jalen Knoll, wide receiver out of Iowa State, going up against Houston this weekend, or Ryan Williams, wide receiver out of Alabama, going up against Georgia, or we can go with Elik Iomanor, wide receiver out of Stanford, going up against Clemson. On paper, all three of these matchups suck. Houston seems like they've had a good defense so far. Georgia obviously is a good defense every year. Clemson, same way, right? Georgia and Clemson just have elite defenses every year with the talent that they bring in, right? And so that automatically kind of puts things on the same level here, except when I went and looked, I was actually kind of surprised that Clemson's defense wasn't doing as well against the pass as I thought they were, right? They're currently 89th versus the pass, so bottom half in FBS. And so, granted, again, they faced Georgia. Georgia did a decent job against them week one. Appalachian State's been playing from behind, so maybe that kind of knocks Clemson down a little bit there against the pass. But regardless, that leaves the door open, in my opinion, for Stanford. As bad as I think they are, and I do think they're bad, and Clemson is favored by 21 in this game for a good reason, Stanford will be playing from behind in this game. And I do think that there is a possibility of them finding the end zone more than once, which very much impacts Mr. Iomanor. I think he has himself a pretty solid game here, at least compared to the other two guys here. So I will be starting Iomanor, but this is a start two question. I probably should have mentioned that. And so that makes me decide between Jalen Knoll and Ryan Williams. And when it comes down to that, I am sitting Ryan Williams and I'm starting Noel. And once again, I hear the homer alerts going off in people's minds. But here's the thing, right? There's actual numbers behind this decision. And I kind of teased it before where, again, even though Houston is written down as rated as 20th versus the pass, Let's take a look at exactly who Houston's defense has faced so far against the pass, right? You got UNLV, who's 128th versus in the passing game. Oklahoma, who is outside the top 100. Rice, who's outside the top 90. And then the most recent team they have faced was Cincinnati, who is 56th versus the pass, and they threw for 213 on them. Not exactly blowing you away or anything like that, but regardless, like, very clearly, a team with a competent passing game is going to be able to pass on Houston's defense pretty easily. And quite frankly, we probably would have seen Cincinnati throw for even more on Houston if Houston wanted to put up a competitive game versus Cincinnati last week instead of having the game script get completely out of Cincinnati's hand and them just run the ball for pretty much the entire second half. So basically, I'm calling Houston's defense on paper frauds. And I think that Noel has himself a really nice chance for a nice weekend here. In his two games that were remotely competitive, we saw him get 8 targets, 8 catches, 135 yards, and a touchdown versus North Dakota. Against Iowa, 9 targets, 5 receptions, 133 yards, and a touchdown there. Very solid performances. And then this past week against Arkansas State, Iowa State just completely blew him out of the water, 52-7. Noel was off the field pretty quickly. He only had 3 targets, 2 catches, 49 yards. Called it a day pretty quickly there. Versus Williams, who clearly has had himself a really, really nice day, or a really, really nice start to his freshman campaign. He's obviously an elite play going forward for CFF, right? I already mentioned Georgia, 9th versus the pass. They're always good defense, and I don't particularly expect a ton of scoring opportunities on either side for this matchup this weekend. And then just like I pointed out with, you know, Pat Bryant and Denzel Boston earlier in this episode, I think some obvious touchdown regression is expected here with Mr. Williams, right? He's got 4 touchdowns in 3 games. He currently has a touchdown for every 3.25 catches. That is clearly not sustainable. That is an insane touchdown rate. And I know there are some that believe the touchdown rate is a sustainable stat. I do not believe so. I think that this will regress. And like I said, same with Boston and Bryant, a game where, you know, a touchdown regression candidate is going up against a really solid defense who is very aware of their existence, I think is going to be a perfect spot for that touchdown regression to come. And so I'm sitting Williams here. Give me Noel, give me Iowa Manor here. So that being said, let me move my tokens back and let's get to our final question of the day. This one comes to us from Dean Paul at Dino561238 on Twitter. He asks, full PPR start 2, Giles Jackson versus Rutgers, Luke Grimm versus TCU, or Donovan Green versus Louisiana? I've already mentioned that I like Donovan Green for this week, so I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to have him start of these guys. Again, one of the higher over-unders out of these three guys. I expect Wake Forest to look pretty good in this weekend, so give me him. And so that leaves Grimm and Jackson. And full PPR makes this kind of interesting here because Jackson, before this point, was a PPR monster, right? You know, 10 catches, 6 catches, 8 catches in the first 3 weeks. Only had 3 catches for 16 yards against Northwestern last week. So, oof, that one hurt a little bit. But regardless, like, his PPR pointage is what really keeps him relevant week to week. And so, Giles Jackson could be an interesting play here from that front. But Luke Grimm's also pretty consistent. He's had 8 targets in each of the last 4 weeks, 12 targets in week 2 against Illinois there. And while he doesn't have quite the production ceiling that we want to see, like, again, he had 6 yards versus UNLV, even though he had 8 targets, so woof. I do think that this is a nice matchup here. Kansas is favored by 1.5 points against TCU. The over-under is 58.5. Not quite the high ceiling play that we want to see with some of these other over-under games. But I think that with all that being said, I'm going to start Luke over Jackson. Because the other part of with Jackson, right, I mentioned this before with Washington in general, they're on the road, they're at Rutgers, over-under 44.5. I just think there'll be less scoring opportunities for him. Although, I should be fair, Grimm is a touchdown regression candidate as well, given the fact that he has 4 touchdowns in 4 games and very little production to show for it. And so I am a little bit worried there, but also, again, I'm going to stick with my worry about the over-under games. But, again, if I'm going with touchdown regression as well, Giles Jackson absolutely is a touchdown regression candidate as well, just the other way, because he only has one touchdown on... How many yards does Jackson have? I have his individual game, but I forgot to write down his... total for the season. Currently he is at, come on, show me. Yeah, he's at 342 yards on one touchdown. So technically speaking, we should be expecting Washington to get plus two touchdowns more than we expect at some point this season. So, but again, a good defense, low scoring game is probably not where we're going to see that. So that's my answer for your question there, Mr. Dean. Again, I'm starting Luke Graham, starting Donovan Green, and sitting Giles Jackson of the three. So, with that, appreciate all of you guys for being patient with me. I was actually very surprised you're able to get through all that in a pretty timely manner. With all that being said, we have come to the end of our show. Thank you all for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus to Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday for another round of waiver wires after week 5. And then, until then, really appreciate you guys. And I hope you have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.